There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Whether it's the game you're looking to watch today in a variety of sports, get ye to Barasti, where you can watch it on one of their 20-plus screens around the venue. Can't make it down here, do stay in touch with the show at DubaiEye Sport, at DubaiEye1038 FM, or of course you can text us at any point on 4001. What have we got for you between now and 6 o'clock when we go off air? The UEFA Nations Cup action for you. We'll react on some of the big results of the last couple of days and look ahead to tonight's games. Rugby Championship live as we speak, Test Cricket live as we speak, all the latest from the US Open, there's Ryder Cup build-up and much, much more. As always, if there's anything that you would like to contribute, then we encourage you to do exactly that. You can text us now on 4001. This is The Grill. We're live from Barasti.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on DubaiEye 103.8.
We'd really like you to join us down here at Barasti. A good crowd in already, and of course, plenty of sport on offer for all those sporting aficionados. Who's going to talk you through the next 3 hours of your afternoon? We have two experts in their respective fields. If there's something you need to know about sport, then these two fellas have got you covered. It is a warm welcome to Carlos van Rosenfeld and, of course, Mr. Mark Archer. Gentlemen, thanks very much indeed for joining us. Carlo?
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom. Good afternoon, listeners. And as you say, action-packed day, especially on the rugby side. Tom, what I can tell you is the All Blacks have seen of Argentina early on this morning in the Rugby Championship, 46 points to 24. Currently live on the big screens here at Barasti, it's South Africa taking on Australia. And what I can tell you is South Africa leading by a single point, 18 points to South Africa, 17 to Australia, 42 minutes played.
Mark Archer also alongside us. New Zealand overcoming a tough Argentina. Argentina came to the party this afternoon.
Afternoon, Tom, Carlos and listeners. Yes, a tough performance by the All Blacks. The Argentina showed up, put in a great game, and it was a flattering scoreline in the end. I think 22 points was the margin of victory, 46 points to 24. In my hometown of Nelson, Trafalgar Park, where I spent much time as a kid, in my misspent youth, watching cricket and rugby. But yeah, great to see the first ever test match in Nelson, in New Zealand. It was the home, this is my random bit of trivia for you, Tom, it was the home of the first ever rugby match in New Zealand, so it was the first ever time the All Blacks had played there. So yeah, good win for the All Blacks, and we're watching a pretty exciting test match over here at Suncorp Stadium at the moment. Controversy at the moment, Carlos, it looks like the TMOs are involved, and we're looking at the big screen to see whether there is a potential try or not for the Wallabies at the start of the second half.
Glenn Jackson says no try. He has awarded the scrum to Australia. And as you say, a bit of interference there on the halfback of Australia. But as I say, Glenn Jackson has not awarded the try to Australia. So it will be an attacking scrum to Australia. As I say, South Africa leading with that single point, 18 points to 17.
Tough place to go and play your rugby over in New Zealand. Argentina tried to rock the apple cart. New Zealand maintained their 100% record. Who stood out for you this morning from the New Zealand point of view?
Steve Hansen made a lot of changes for the All Blacks, 7 changes in total, and then there were 3 enforced changes in the first 20 minutes with injury. So it was very much a new look All Black team, but that's no excuses for the performance. Shannon Frizzell on his second match, playing a match, he looks like a useful player. The number 6 really burst from nowhere. He plays for the local team, Tasman. He was good. Richie Moanga made his first start as an All Black. He wasn't as impressive. He had to live up to the high standards that Beauden Barrett set last weekend when he scored 4 tries against Australia. Barrett was dropped from the match day 23. In came Richie Moanga, the Crusaders fly half. And it looks like the Aussies here are really threatening. Oh, just short of the line there. So for me, it was. But many of the Argentinians really had strong games, and they dominated possession and they also dominated territory. But the defence of the All Blacks was strong, and every time they got a chance to really go down there and capitalise, they scored tries. So 6 tries to 3 was the margin of victory. And there's a few of the new boys. TJ Perenara also had a strong game, substituting in for the first choice halfback Aaron Smith. So Shannon Frizzell, TJ Perenara were the standout players.
Talk to us about the rugby heritage down there in Nelson as well. You mentioned. You grew up in that neck of the woods as well. Long rugby heritage?
Long rugby heritage. Not the newly formed union there is the Tasman Union, which have done really well in recent years, but, and that's a combination of what's the Nelson and Marlborough. They form part of the Crusaders catchment, and so many of the guys, it's a really nice place to live, great sort of lifestyle town, and so it's a bit more relaxed up there in Nelson. But yeah, first ever time that the All Blacks have gone there, but the first ever rugby match ever ever held in New Zealand was held in Nelson. It's an old sort of settled town, very old traditional boys' school there, Nelson College, where I went to school. Rugby and cricket to the fore. And yeah, good to see. I think they got 22,000 people to show up, which doesn't sound like many, but in a small town like Nelson, that's a substantial effort.
That's what's been happening down in New Zealand, with New Zealand overcoming a tough Argentina in the first game of the Rugby Championship. 46-24 is how it finished, 18-7 at half-time, as New Zealand were given a tough test but earned a hard-fought win over Argentina in the Rugby Championship. You talked about the changes rung for the New Zealanders. We've also seen changes in the Springbok and the Wallaby teams as well. Let's get a South African perspective on this one. Happy with what you're seeing from the box at the moment?
Not really, Tom. I think, you know, South African rugby at the moment, I don't think is in a healthy state. They're down to the seventh ranked team in the world, and quite interesting to see the changes that Rassie Erasmus has brought into today. To me, the biggest one is that he's actually left Malcolm Marks on the bench and started with Bonga Numbuyane. I see Marks is now on, but to me, the big question mark for South African rugby is still around that number 10 jersey. He seems to keep assisting with Elton Jantjies, and I still don't believe that Jantjies is the answer for the box.
Explain that Malcolm Marks decision for me as well. Is that down to form? Is that down to fitness at the moment? Because for me, he seems to be one of the standout players for the box in recent weeks.
Yeah, well, to me, he's the best hooker in world rugby at the moment. And I think maybe Russ's thinking was that he's obviously got the All Blacks coming up, that he wanted to rest him for that, kind of keep him a little bit fresher, and then obviously giving Bongi the opportunity to start. But to me, a very, very strange decision to leave ultimately the best hooker in world rugby on the bench.
From a Wallaby point of view, Mark Archer, again, changes having been rung for this Wallabies team, because Michael Checker needed to do something, didn't he? He's been on the wrong end of a few results recently.
Yeah, Michael Checker, a man under pressure in the last few weeks, of course. Two pretty comprehensive losses to the All Blacks, and that's not really saying much because the All Blacks have been so good in this, but he's made some big changes. Of course, he's dropped the usual fly half, Bernard Foley, to the bench. In comes Kirtley Beal from inside centre to fly half, and he has a partnership resumed with Matt Tumia at inside centre. So that seems to be working so far for the Aussies. They're trying to get a bit more dynamism into their attacking play, and Beal is the man. Tumia provides the solidity in the midfield and gives them a bit of guidance there in the back line. So that's what they've done there. Unfortunately for Australia, David Pocock was ruled out with a neck injury that he suffered against the All Blacks last weekend, so he misses out. And also Israel Folau was a late scratching as well, the star fullback for Australia. So it's some big changes there. The big news in the forwards that Rory Arnold, the Brumbies lock, also starts there. So Checker really shuffling the pack, you know, throwing the dice out there to see what he can come up with. The Aussies at home really need to put in a decent performance here.
At the moment, they are trailing by that single point. This will be deemed, should it stay the same, or should South Africa be able to record a victory down there? More pressure on the Aussie coach?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of questions are being asked about Michael Checker. And Tom, I think if Australia continue this form through the Rugby Championship, I don't think Michael Checker will keep his job till 2019, to be perfectly honest with you. So, as you say, he's rung the change. Israel Folau was a big blow for the Aussies today, not being available. I kind of like what Kirtley Beal is doing at five. He just seems to add a little bit more flow to the game. But yeah, testing times for Michael Checker at the moment.
We're going to get some highlights for the New Zealand game now. That's what took place a little earlier on. We'll come back with another score update from Australia against South Africa, which is live down here at Barasti as we speak. So if you want to watch that game, then get yourself down here. In the meantime, though, this is what happened a little earlier on over in NZ, down in Nelson, with New Zealand overcoming a tough ask from Argentina.
Jano now stepping brilliantly. Mojano! Ramiro Mojano scores the first try of the test, and it's a beauty. He's got a man outside him. It's Moroni, and he's in.
The foot is in touch, okay, before he grounds it, so no try. Yeah.
Good year. Reid, close, over. He's got TJ Pinnaroa inside him, and he's got.
That was New Zealand beating Argentina a little earlier on. A lot closer affair at the moment down in Australia, as South Africa lead the Wallabies by that single and solitary point. It is 18 plays 17 with what, the best pass of half an hour or so left in this game. In terms of the team selection for the Wallabies. You mentioned there about Brendan Foley being left out. You mentioned about the enigmatic replacements that have come in as well. Is that what Chequers needs at the moment? Does he need line breakers?
He's just looking for combinations. I think with Bernard Foley, he's a little bit predictable. He's your sort of traditional fly half. He doesn't offer much threat with the running game. Kirtley Beale offers a big threat with the running game and is a decent punter of the ball.
Do you rate Beale or not?
I think he's a really good club player. I don't know if fly half is his position that he's going to win a lot of tight test matches at fly half for Australia. But I think Checker has to try something. He has to try and mix it up and try some different combinations. I like Matt Tamura as a player. He's a really solid inside centre. And that's the balance he'll find with Kirtley Beale. So let's wait and see. Beale offers something from 10. It's just whether his forwards can give him the ball and the time and space to be able to be creative, as we know he can be.
From Kirtley Beale, I mean, he's one of those players, isn't he? He's like Marmite. You either love him or you loathe him. But, I mean, he's been tried in so many different positions for Australia throughout the years as well. Seems to have been around for years and years and years. I mean, where would you... Is he your starting 15, Carlos, or yeah, where would you play him?
I mean, if Izzy Folau is not available, I still believe, to your point, Tom, his best position is fullback. That's where I'll play him. And I think if I was in Michael Checker's position today, I most probably would have selected him in the 15 jersey because, to your point, it does give some fantastic attacking options. But I don't think he's that steady number 10 that you need to win test matches, Tom. So to me, Kirtley Beale, great player, but he needs to wear the number 15 jersey.
15 for you, Archie?
I like him at 15. Look, I think it's a bit mix and match about who you're playing and what sort of style you want to play. So I think 15 is good for him. He plays in the centres, of course. He probably could play on the wing if required. And then obviously they're trying him at 10 today. So yeah, I like him at 15. But if Israel Folau's playing, he's got to find a place for him. So then it's probably the midfield.
We're talking about a championship that has been dominated by New Zealand yet again this year. It has been in recent years. Notwithstanding the 15 that started against Argentina today, but let's take the best 15 that Hansen has to select from for New Zealand at the moment. Any of the Wallabies, any of the box get into that 15 over any of those New Zealand players?
Oh, I'm sure there's a few players that you could debate either way getting in or not. For the Springboks, I think Malcolm Marks is a wonderful player. He would probably go close to getting in that side. Eden Estabeth is a great lock. Whether he gets in ahead of Brody Retallick or Sam Whitelock, I'm sure we could debate that one. They're probably much of a muchness there. And then it's really horses for courses of the Aussies, who I really like. Will Guinea is a heck of a player, I think. But again, does he get in over Aaron Smith? Does he get in over TJ Perenara?
No.
Unlikely. Israel Folau at fullback? Yeah, maybe you'd look to put Israel Folau in there. But then you've got Ben Smith. You've got some decent players in the All Blacks who play at 15. You've got Damien McKenzie comes off the bench as well. So, look, it's tough to see it at the moment. The All Blacks are really firing. They're 12 months away from a World Cup. And, of course, you don't win a World Cup away 12 months out. So they're trying to get some combinations. Today was about building depth, strength of depth for the All Blacks. They seven changes. So a lot of guys, they're trying to integrate into the team and build some strength and depth. Because if you do lose some players to injuries or suspensions like you do during a World Cup, they've got guys who can step in and almost raise the game a level.
Tom, I said it this week on Twitter, and I said that if Argentina, Australia and South Africa put a team together, their best team, they will still not beat the All Blacks. The All Blacks at the moment are untouchable. They're just a class above the rest. They play at such pace, and they bring in their second squad, and to me they'll still beat any team in the world currently, even with their second string star. That's how good they are. That's the great job Hansen's doing, and I think the scary thing is that there's so much depth within that All Black team. So it doesn't matter what 15 they put on the park, they are so, so competitive. And to me, they are there's a bigger division in world rugby between the All Blacks and the rest of the team.
So is that not a negative for the championship itself at the moment, that you've got one team that is so dominant over all the other three?
I mean, from a supporter's perspective, it's probably yes, but I think it's everybody just loves to see the All Blacks play the way that the way they execute. And I think to your point, it is a bit of a shame because I kind of find that the rugby championship at the moment is not really competitive because the All Blacks are just so much stronger than any other team out there.
Is that the same opinion for an All Black fan or not? Or bring on the results?
Look, I think there'll be some tough games in the rugby championship. I think the All Blacks playing away against South Africa at Emirates Park in Johannesburg is potentially a really tough match.
Not a chance.
You've got to go at altitude. And look, I think they're still trying to work through some combinations, so it depends on which team Steve Hansen picks, but it'd be a shame if the rugby championship's wrapped up by them. I think we'll see a very competitive match in Wellington next week when the Springboks travel over to play the All Blacks. But I think the big test, I think, for a lot of these teams is when they go north to the Northern Hemisphere. We've seen Ireland being consistently brilliant over the last couple of years. All Blacks play Ireland at Dublin, and then they go to Twickenham, or vice versa. I can't remember which order it is. They play at Twickenham as well. So two massive tests there. And then I think only then we'll know after the autumn how the teams are really stacking up 12 months away from that Rugby World Cup. So that for me is the exciting part. Let's see what happens in those October-November test matches.
I think any international team now is competitive with the All Blacks until the 60-minute mark. But those last 20 minutes, Tom, I don't know what it is. They just seem to have more gas in the tank, and then they literally just blow any team off their feet. So I think at this moment in time, it really, really is very, very difficult to compete with them. And to your point, Archie, maybe Ireland. Maybe the Irish is the only team currently that can give the All Blacks a bit of a run, and we're going to have to wait till November to see.
Australia just taking the lead against South Africa, 20 points to 18, thanks to a penalty goal, which was successful and kicked. I mean, one team we haven't mentioned from the Rugby Championship is Argentina. They were down in New Zealand earlier on today, defeated down in New Zealand, as was to be expected. In recent years, we've seen their admission into the championship. We've seen El Jaguares performing very well in the Super Rugby format as well. Are we seeing a move forward from Argentinians? And again, going back to that sort of point, if you were to make a team of the Rugby Championship, your dream team from all the teams, is there anyone knocking on the door for a place in that starting 15?
I think as a team, Argentina are much improved. They tend to peak around World Cups. They tend to find their form and their style around World Cup time, and they've been very good. They made the semi-finals in 2015 in the UK, and I just think that their introduction into Super Rugby with the Jaguares has been good. They got two away wins in New Zealand this year against the Blues and the Chiefs, so that's a momentous step forward for them. And then, of course, they knocked over the Springboks at Mendoza last weekend, a pretty comfortable victory as well. And so they are finally finding some consistency. They've got some talented players. I mean, strength of depth across their backs look really strong. They've struggled a bit. Their traditional strengths was always in the forwards. It was always the scrum. It was always the driving line-out maul. That hasn't been as strong today. We saw the All Blacks knock them over a couple of times at scrum time. But that's their traditional strength, big strong backs and a strong scrummaging unit. But I'm really encouraged by the progress that the Box have made. And I would be surprised if the Box probably don't beat Australia. If Argentina don't beat, say, Australia, maybe back there, and I think they'll give the Aussies a good run out in the test match that they play over in Australia soon as well.
Listen to Dubai 103.8. We're broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. This is The Grill. We're with you through until 6 o'clock this evening. No Premier League action for you today because of this bizarre new tournament that is upon us, the UEFA Nations Cup. In fact, I'll give over the floor before now and 6 o'clock to my two esteemed colleagues to explain the ins and the outs of the UEFA Nations Cup, how it works, who qualifies, what it's all for, and of course the do's and the don'ts. We've got that for you before 6. Let's take a short break. We'll be back with more sports straight after that.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Yeah, talking about that game, it is Australia against South Africa at the moment. It's the second of two games in the Rugby Championship today. New Zealand victorious earlier on today. Carlos van Rosenfeld, CVR, has the latest from Australia.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is it's 59 minutes played. Australia leading South Africa 20 points to 18. Very, very tight game at this moment in time. Early in the second half, Australia getting over for a score, but the try disallowed. So, as I say, an exchange of penalties. Currently, Australia 20, South Africa 18.
A rugby is back with a bang, not just in the Southern Hemisphere, but also in the Northern Hemisphere. Last weekend saw the first weekend of a newly titled Premiership for club rugby in the Northern Hemisphere. It used to be the Aviva Prem, it's now the Gallagher Prem.
The waiting is over. A brand new season. New stories to be told. New stars to break through.
And he's got three tries on a Sunday afternoon. are at it again. Johan scores! Arlens will put the cherry on the cake. Saracens the champions. They have wrestled the trophy back.
Easy for a Gloucester fan to get carried away with the first week of action over in the Gallagher Prem. But let's get the level head and opinions of a couple of Southern Hemisphere fellows who've been watching on with interest. In fact, there was a game last night, wasn't there?
Yeah, Tom, it was. Of course, Harlequins played against Leicester. And what I can tell you is that... it was Northampton Saints against Harlequins. My apologies. And the Saints beat Harlequins 25 points to 18. And of course, your beloved Gloucester, I was waiting for you to bring that up because you had your opener against Saints last weekend. And I tell you what, the Gloucester team is really, really looking good. Cipriani in at 10 just creates that additional excitement. And as we are, very, very close chance there by the Springboks. A little chip through from Elton Jones. Cheston Colby just a little bit too late and the ball runs dead. But yeah, Tom, coming back to English rugby, very, very exciting season. I like the changes, Johan Ackerman. Of course, he's brought in the likes of Yaku Creel. He's brought in Dreyer at tight end, then Danny Cipriani at fly, 12 trees at centre. I don't know, I really like the look of that Gloucester team, and I think that they could bring a couple of surprise packages to the Premiership this season. Also, Bristol off to a fantastic start. Of course, they made the big step up. They beating Bath. That was a huge result for them last weekend. So, yeah, I think the game up north is in really, really good condition at the moment. I think it's exciting times.
One interesting thing last week, Leicester Tigers had a big loss and went around and sacked the coach.
Amazing, yeah.
After one game. It's almost like football now, yeah. Or worse than football. So, I mean, a big, big move in the first game of the season. You lose that comprehensively and the coach is gone. So, yeah, it's a tough place, the Gallagher Premiership.
Jordan Murphy's taken over.
Yeah, he's been there forever, isn't he? As a player and as sort of a assistant coach, he may get the job on a full-time basis while they scout around. But good win for Bristol last week. They beat Bath.
Yeah.
Pat Lamb and the likes of Stephen Luatua. He's got a few big New Zealand name players there. Bristol,
George Smith.
Bristol, who have been promoted from the first division there. And interesting talk around the Premiership this year about private equity company CVC coming in and buying the Premiership. They were the former owners of Formula One and built that property up and sold it for a massive property profit. They want to put a lot of money into the league, and obviously a lot of the owners in the clubs all lose money in the Premiership. So they're obviously looking at this opportunity. If they do come in and buy it, that may end promotion relegation, because it's a very difficult thing to have when you have an ownership of a league that you have teams coming up and coming down. It's very hard to structure it. So interesting to see what happens, those developments. I guess watch the space over the next couple of months and see what happens.
What's the interest of having a company like that look at the brand that is?
Well, they're an investment company, so they'll want to make a profit out of it eventually. So they want to build up the product, they'll want to increase the revenues, they'll want to cut the cost down, and then ultimately probably try and sell it to someone else. But it's at the moment the clubs are owned by the owners, and the Premiership, the body that owns it, are probably looking to find different ways of bringing in income. It's very hard. Most of these clubs all lose money. So someone's taking the loss, which is usually the wealthy owner of the rugby club. So more revenue, more money, less risk for the owners, and then this new income can be invested. We know players, it costs so much in most sports, whether it be football or rugby in the Premiership. So it'll give them a chance to basically build the league. It's a strong league already, but it'll maybe compete against some of the massive money that's in the top 14 in France and keep the league as strong as possible.
That said, I mean, we're looking at major investment from individual benefactors and owners, none more so than over in Bristol at the moment. We've seen big investments into football down in that part of the world, big investments into rugby as well. They seem to be paying dividends up from the Championship into the Prem this year, and a result in the first day of the season.
Yeah, Tom, you know, as I say, money can do wonderful things. You know, we've seen it in the Premier League, and now it's happening on the rugby side, and I think it's fantastic. These rich guys want a hobby, they decide to buy a rugby club, and it's fantastic to see the results come through. And as you say, the owner of Bristol, he's really done a lot for that club. They seem to have attracted the more older type of guys, the guys in the latter years of their career, but often that's the experience you need, kind of get them back into the Premiership. And I think it's exciting times to see if this private equity company will come in and what they will do to the league, because I think at the moment the Premiership is getting stronger and stronger, but it's very, very difficult to compete with the top 14 because of the salaries that they're paying the guys in France.
Be interesting to see how Bristol go this week as well. Obviously, great victory for them in the opening day. Good to see Pat Pat Lambach in the Premiership. He's one of the game's great gentlemen, isn't he? Wasn't too gentlemanly on the field itself whilst playing, but certainly off the field. Great ethic he brings, great work ethic, and he's put together a nice little team there. So it's going to be interesting to see how things pan out. A couple of games later on today.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is Wasps will take on Exeter. That kicks off at 5 o'clock, so we'll bring you bang up to date when that kicks off. Leicester Tigers take on Newcastle Falcons. My beloved Saracens take on Bristol this afternoon, so that will be a big, big challenge. They're, of course, playing at the Allianz Arena in St. Albans. And then, of course, the big one this afternoon, Bath take on your beloved Gloucester. That kicks off at 7:30 this evening.
That's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? You know, obviously, West Country derby. We're seeing so many of them with Bristol. Exeter also in the top league at the moment. So some good rugby heritage in that part of the world. But Bath-Gloucester is one of the great derbies in English rugby. And Bath, with a couple of question marks at the moment. They were woeful last weekend. They've lost a couple of the big names. Matt Bannon, obviously, going over from Bath over to Gloucester, playing on the wing now for Gloss. And I was talking to Gary Guscott, Jeremy's brother, who's based out here. I was talking to him at the Sevens yesterday because rugby back in the UAE as well. And he's saying, yeah, worrying times down there at the moment. Just not enough retention of the big guns and the players. And again, he puts it down to that M word, money.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I think the average rugby player, if you look, has probably got about an eight-year career. And, you know, these guys want to cash in. They're trying to secure their futures. But as you say, I think that on the west side of the UK, rugby is very, very strong at the moment. And to your point, if Bath don't get a result tonight, and I kind of fancy Gloucester against Bath tonight. I really, really like the look of this Gloucester team. I think a couple of questions will be getting asked, as you say. If they didn't look great last week against Bristol. So telling times for Bath, but it's still early days in the season.
Early days in the season. I suppose one of the other big stories coming out of the first weekend of competition was the continued excellence of Exeter. I mean, if ever you needed a blueprint of success from a club level, investment and how investment can get results, it's Exeter, surely.
Yeah, I think they're one of only two teams in the Premier League that either break even or actually make money. So they've got a great part in Exeter, but they seem to defend their home turf with a lot of strength and a lot of possession-based football that the way they play down there. They've done a wonderful job keeping a lot of homegrown players. Have all come through there. Jack Now, the England and Lions winger, is one that guy that springs to mind. And yeah, great model. They're not as flashy. They don't have the big names of some of the clubs like the Saracens and the Quins and, you know, these types of clubs. But seem to do a very good job. Very captive supporter base down there. They don't have to compete with Premier League football clubs. They don't have to compete with a lot of other activities. I think Exeter on a Saturday afternoon is probably the place to go down to Sandy Park and watch the local boys do their stuff. So one team town, really. So it's great to see Exeter continuing to do well against the clubs with a lot more money and a lot better funded.
Just a couple of other results to bring you up to date with from the Guinness Pro 14, which is also back underway. Ulster taking on Edinburgh yesterday was a close run thing, actually. Ulster eventually running out as winners in this one, 30 points to 29 in a high-scoring game. And Glasgow, the other of the Scottish franchises, they beat Munster convincingly over in Glasgow, 25 points to 10. There are games to look forward to over in the Guinness Pro 12 a little later on this afternoon as well. So not just the Gallagher Premiership, but also the Pro 14. Dragons take on the Southern Kings, Connaught against Zebra, Ospreys against Cheetahs, Benetton take on Blues, and then Scarlets against Leinster. Are you a supporter of these South African teams playing in the Guinness Pro 14?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I really like it. I think, you know, from a timing perspective, it's basically the games are at a good time to watch. And I just think that, to me, the South African teams haven't been really too competitive. I think, you know, the Kings and the Cheetahs, they played last season for the first time, and I just felt that it's really not as competitive as what they should be, and also not filling stadiums, you know. We had a couple of teams come play in Bloemfontein and play in Port Elizabeth, and the stadiums very, very badly attended. So I like them. I think it's good that they're in the competition, but I don't really know if it's kind of got the effect in South Africa as to what they're looking for, Tom.
Long way to go for an away game, isn't it, Mark Archer?
It is, but what an enjoyable place to go to for a couple of for a week or so. A bit of safarying in between Bloemfontein and on Port Elizabeth there. Some great places to go and visit. You get the coastal town of Port Elizabeth, and then you get some of the high veld or some of the stuff up in Bloemfontein. So yeah, two great places in South Africa, and a wonderful. Surely, rather than spending in Newport or Munster, you get a couple of weeks over in South Africa during the winter. So I think for those guys, it's a wonderful trip.
What are you saying? So you're suggesting that there's no safari in Newport or not?
Well, Munster, you probably find some wild animals there, I would have thought.
Probably find a safari and a couple of computers down there or something like that. A bit of push and shove in the Australia-South Africa game. Sivia.
Yeah, what I can tell you is that Australia have kicked another penalty collapse scrum by South Africa, and Australia are now leading 23-18, but it's Archie Sneyman and Malcolm Marks. Bit of hamburgs there with Michael Looper, but everything seems to be settled there, Tom. And as I said, the boys just getting to know each other a little bit. Speaking about the Pro 14, two of our ex-colleagues are on the commentating panel there. Of course, Emma Dodds is the host, and Rory Lawson, he's commentating there with Doddy Weir. So fantastic commentating team on the Pro 14 at this moment in time. But going back to Australia, what I can tell you is 69 minutes played, last 10 minutes of the game, Australia leading South Africa 23 points to 18.
A couple of games for you in the top 14 as well later on today. Bordeaux Bagel take on Montpellier. That one kicking off shortly, actually, at 3:45 this afternoon. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Sorry, 4:45 this afternoon, local time here in the UAE. Toulouse take on La Rochelle. Perpignan at home to Lyon. Racing 92 take on Agen. And Clermont take on Stade Francais. Lots of rugby to look forward to. Still live rugby down here at Barasti. If you would like to get involved in the conversation, we encourage you to do so now. Text us now, 4001.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Time for us to talk cricket now. A quick update from the rugby, though, before we turn our attention. CBR's watching Australia against South Africa.
Yeah, Tom, last 7 minutes of this test match, Australia taking on South Africa. And what I can tell you is Australia are leading 23 points to 18. They've just kicked another penalty. And as I said, they are currently leading 23 points to 18, 7 minutes to play.
Right, let's turn our attention to the cricket, because we have the fifth and final test match ongoing over at the Oval at the moment, a test match which is something of a dead rubber, if there is such a thing, when it comes to test series. England having wrapped up the series against India earlier on this week, but that will not of course affect this particular game, a game which has been not overshadowed but has certainly been dominated by one man in particular after his retirement, or his announcement for retirement from international cricket earlier on this week.
Congratulations, mate. It's been a right laugh. Well done, pal.
That'll be. Don't even like the bloke anyway.
We banged up farming this, farming that. It's lambing season. Who cares, mate? Bore off. Why should have retired 2 years ago?
Oh, just want to say huge congratulations on what's been an absolutely fabulous career. You've given absolutely everything for the shirt, for the badge, for this team, and for every team you've been involved in. So proud and privileged to be able to call you one of my friends. And although you'll be leaving this family, I'm so excited that you'll be able to spend more time with yours.
I can personally thank you for the days you've given me just drinking cups of tea with my feet up, watching you bat forever and ever. I've loved them.
Chef, it's a huge honour to send you this message, having played with you for every test match, and everyone in the room apart from Jimmy to have shared every game with you. It's been very humbling. Obviously, all I've ever known as a guy playing cricket for England and at school was Alistair Cook opening the batting.
Cookie, congratulations on a very highly successful career, of course. Now you can get back to your true vocation in life, sticking your arm up a sheep's bottom. Well done, mate.
Graham Swan with his own particular take on the life and times of Alistair Cook. A legend?
Oh, definitely. I think one of the top three English test players of all time. His record is outstanding. It's a tough job opening the batting, and he's done it for 12 years. And he's had his ups and downs. It's been an interesting career, but as a batsman, I think he's played 160 consecutive test matches for England. It's been phenomenal, and you don't get through that, Tom, 12 years opening the batting for any team without having a lot of mental fortitude, without having some ability and ability to deal with the ups and downs. And Alistair Cook is he's a nice guy off the field. I've met him a number of times, I'm sure you have. He's a good bloke. He's just one of those pretty down-to-earth guys. There's not too many frilly things about him. He's not on social media, and he just goes about his job, and he's accumulated many runs. And he's done a wonderful job for England, and that's really all you can say. He's been magnificent over a long period of time.
Let's get the a score update if we can, because I was watching this game last night. I'm sure many cricket fans, not just England cricket fans, tuned in at 2 o'clock yesterday local time here in the UAE to see if England won that toss, to see if England batted first, and to see the reception that Alastair Cook would get from the Oval faithful. Millions, I'm sure, watching in. And he got the ovation that he deserved, I think.
He did. It was a standing ovation. He got the guard of honour by the Indian team as he walked to the crease. Virat Kohli shook his hand. And it was all that the man deserves. And I'm sure he's one of those guys that actually doesn't want the fanfare when he goes out to bat. He just wants to get on with the job. But he deserves it. He announced that decision after the fourth test match. And it looked for much of yesterday that Alastair Cook would go on and score another Test 100. He started his Test career in India with a Test 100, and it looked as though he was going to end his Test career in England against India with a Test 100. But unfortunately, he was dismissed for 71. He was the top scorer in the England innings to date. Joss Butler is threatening that at 60 not out at the moment, and he did a wonderful job. But so I'll give you a quick update from the score. Tom, day two of this fifth and final Test match at the Oval. England, of course, have won the series 3-1, but England are batting first. Good toss to win, 289 for 8. It's Joss Butler, 60 not out, and Stuart Broad on 26. Now, just as looks at India, got well back into the match yesterday. They bounced back with those late wickets. But this is a partnership now of 75 runs. It just seems to be this way the series have gone. Just when the match has been deadlocked, England team to have come up with the bigger moments. And that's, to me, been the two difference between the teams. There hasn't been a lot between them so far. So, Alastair Cook, 71. You see Moeen Ali batting at 3, scored 50. And it's Joss Butler, 60 not out, steering England to somewhat of a decent total, but 289 for 8. But I'm sure Virat Kohli is licking his lips. This is usually the best batting wicket in the UK, and he'll be waiting to get a bat sometime later today when India will get a chance to see what they can do. But Alastair Cook, his penultimate innings in Test cricket, 71 yesterday.
A couple of cheap dismissals yesterday as well. Joe Root, Johnny Bairstow, yet again not in the runs for either of those two. Sam Curran got himself out as well, cheaply. Okay, I get it. You know, England have won the series, but does that paper over the cracks that still exist?
Oh, I think so. I think top order. England had some problems before Alastair Cook retired, but now they've got to find not just one opening batsman. I think Keaton Jennings is hanging on by the skin of his teeth, mainly due to the fact that there's no one else. So he's still there. They need to find another opening batsman, and they still haven't solved the problem at number three. I don't think Moeen Ali is the final solution. He did a great job yesterday, but he doesn't look like a number three. He doesn't press like
Test three, though, is he?
So there's three top-order batsmen that England have to find. Their middle order's got them out of trouble. Sam Curran's got them out of trouble batting number eight. And that's what's been there. But the big difference between the teams has really been one of those England players have just stood up at the right time in the Test match series and got them out of trouble. And that's, for me, been a closely fought series. 3-1 does a bit of injustice to India, actually, about how good they've been at times. But unfortunately, again, England, I think, have just pipped the big moments, and that means that they've won the series 3-1.
It is a strange one as well, because you look at it on paper. I mean, India's seam attack has been seamless throughout the entire tournament. They've been the pick of the bowlers, if you like, throughout this series. As you say, it's sort of, it flatters to deceive the actual result at the end.
When the series started, we were talking about this long, dry, hot English summer. The pitches are going to turn early. The Indian spinners will be given a chance. But it's what's turned out, it's the Indian seam bowlers that have actually been really good. And you would have thought those English conditions, Broad, Anderson, Curran, Wokes, would have maybe really thrived. And they've done okay. They've done fine. And I think the biggest Indian problem is they haven't found batsmen to score runs around Virat Kohli. He's had to shoulder
Pujara
in the last Test match, but they dropped him. They didn't pick him at the start of the series. So you've got a guy, I think he's ranked 3rd or 4th in the world in Test rankings. They didn't want to back him, though. So the selectors have got a bit to answer for there, but the Indian opening batsmen haven't convinced. Virat Kohli's been exposed to the new ball. He's had to do what his best to deal with that. But the Indian seamers have stood up and done their job as well. So, again, not too much between the teams. I just think the likes of Sam Curran's had a wonderful series. He's really chipped in, looks like a promising cricketer for the future. His brother's not a bad little player as well. His dad was a good cricketer, Kevin Curran, when he played at Northamptonshire, the former Zimbabwe international. So, it's interesting times for England. They're going to have to adapt, because they go to Sri Lanka in the winter. And I think, I can't remember where they go in January, maybe the Caribbean. But it's going to be a tough series for them in Sri Lanka, away from home, against on turning pitches. I'm sure they're going to be turning from the start there against two or three Sri Lankan spinners. So let's wait and see. I think England, after the series is done and dusted, they've got as many questions still to be answered that they had at the start of the series.
One of those questions, which was answered in this particular text, is Johnny Bairstow back with the gloves again. Some disparaging comments from Michael Vaughan, amongst others, in the nature that Johnny Bairstow got out in that last test match. Some suggesting that he was sulking because he didn't have the gloves. He did have a fractured finger. A lot of other suggestions. I mean, why was he playing in that test match?
Well, you can't keep wicket with a fractured finger because it just takes another knock on that injury.
Can you field with a fractured finger?
Well,
can you
bat with a fractured finger? They obviously thought he was good enough to field, but you would have thought you wouldn't have risked it. If you take a knock, I'm not sure whether they hit him in the field, probably mid-off, mid-on, maybe a bit of fine leg, a bit of third man. But, you know, if you've got a fractured finger, you would have thought you would stand down for the test match, give someone else a go and get it fully recovered. Because another knock on a fractured finger, Tom, tell you from experience, it's not nice if you're keeping wicket.
Yeah.
And Josh Butler does an admirable job with behind the stumps as well. So funny just Michael Vaughan to make those comments. Johnny Bairstow didn't seem to have his attitude right in that test match as well. So something was going on there behind the scenes. And maybe he said he was fit, I want to keep. And they said, no, England, you're not going to keep. And he sort of packed a huff. But yeah, interesting to see really what happened there behind the scenes.
We are talking cricket at the moment. CBR's talking cricket, but keeping an eye on the rugby. What's happening in the rugby at the moment?
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you, South Africa has had a try disallowed. So it's 2 minutes left. South Africa really pressing the Aussie try line here, but the Springboks need to score, Tom. As I say, a minute left of this game. Australia still leading 23 points to 18 with the Springboks pushing to score the winning try.
We'll take a short break. When we come back, we should have a result from the second game of the Rugby Championship.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
So when we went to the break, I said that we should have a result in the Rugby Championship when we came back. We haven't as yet because they're still playing.
Yeah, Tom. 82 minutes of this test match, and South Africa have got an attacking scrum on the Wallabies trial, and you can see Michael Checker screaming out the orders. And as I said, this will be the last movement of the game. South Africa need to score. If they score a 5-pointer, they will even the game at 23 points. Well, of course, if they convert that, they will win it. So all or nothing here for the Springboks as they've got this attacking scrum on the Australian try line.
Fascinating finish to this second game of the Rugby Championship. It is South Africa on the attack at the moment. All eyes on that one. We're about 10 minutes away from lunch over at the Oval as well. Another sellout down at the Oval. Final test match of the English season down there. So what's the latest? What is happening? Mark Archer can tell us more.
Yeah, England have done well this morning. They've really bounced back, and there's a partnership of 83 runs between Broad and Butler. Josh Butler, 62 not out. Stuart Broad, 31 not out. So he's chipped in with the bat there, the tail ender. So it means that England are currently 297 for 8. So they've done a good job getting the innings back on track, trying to score a competitive first inning score there. So Alistair Cook was 71 yesterday. Moen Ali with 50. It's Josh Butler leading the way today with 62 not out. So England getting close to lunchtime, 297 for 8.
We do now have a result in the Rugby Championship. Sivia.
Yeah, Tom, and Michael Checker can breathe again. Australia have beaten South Africa 23 points to 18. Sustained pressure by the Springboks at the end, just not good enough. And as I say, the Wallabies have edged them. They finally get that much-needed victory. And big, 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 big question marks around Russie Rasmus and his selections.
Great advert for Rugby Championship though, this one. We've seen some one-sided affairs up until now. This down to the last minute, it'd be good for the Championship as a whole.
Yeah, much needed win for Michael Checker and Australia. What it means, Tom, in the Rugby Championship, the All Blacks are 3 from 3. It's Australia's first win, and the Springboks have only got one victory as well. So the All Blacks, almost by default, are going to maybe wrap it up next weekend, potentially against
South Africa. They will wrap it up next weekend. No questions asked.
Which could lead us with a couple of dead rounds to finish off. But again, it's all about the teams. They're 12 months away from a Rugby World Cup in Japan. I think the coaches want to get their combinations right. They want to find out who's going to step up in the tough moments. And this was a tough match between both teams. Both teams were in it until the final minutes there. So Africa pressing. They were very, very close. And it just couldn't find a killer instinct to get that final try and tie the match up. So, yeah, good win for Australia, 23 points to 18 in Suncorp Stadium in Brisbane. And next week we'll see the Springboks head to Wellington, to the Cape Town, to take on the All Blacks, and Australia will host Argentina.
That's what's been happening in the Rugby Championship. In the meantime, England still batting against India. Some thought that India would wrap them up nice and early this morning, but they have continued their form in this particular series. Let's get the late... this is one game, obviously, that there is one story that is dominating this game. It's the final game in England colours for Alistair Cook. So let's hear from the man himself. Chef.
Difficult because you know what you're giving up, but quite easy for how I'm feeling about it, really, about my cricket and kind of the feelings over the last 12 months and kind of how they've kind of encroached into my game a little bit. And yeah, it's actually quite an easy decision, but obviously it is a big decision. It's a bit like the captaincy. I had the similar feelings, obviously a bit shorter time for the captaincy, but for this, you know it's the right decision, but obviously your head's telling you it's the right decision, but obviously your heart knows what you're giving up. Going back, quite an easy decision, but yeah.
Can I take you right back to the beginning when you were making that flight from the Caribbean to Nagpur? Did you ever believe or dream that you'd be sitting here 160 test matches later still playing for England?
No, I mean, I suppose the statement I put out is, for 12 years we've literally lived the dream as a family, myself as a cricketer. It's not just me, obviously everyone's involved in it, and I would never have imagined that. I didn't think I'd be playing. Girls, you leave West Indies, you never thought you'd be playing 3 days later. So but no, I mean, it's above and beyond anything I could imagine. And I suppose the one thing I can be I'm proud of, it, I genuinely believe I've become the best player that I could have become. You can't compare yourself to anyone else. You can just compare yourself to, I genuinely believe, like, after this week I've become the best test player that I could become.
He's going to continue playing for Essex, but this is his final game for England. Or is it, Mark Archer? I have this sort of nagging sort of little thing in the back of my mind. It's all good and well, Alistair Cook deciding that he's got nothing left in the tank, he's dried up, it's the right time for him. But given the issues that England have at the top of the order, who's to say that this time next year or next summer, when he's scoring big runs, daddy hundreds for Essex under the tutelage of Graham Gooch and the rest of the team down there as well, likely what has been and what got it, caught the attention for selectors in the first place, England still haven't solved their opener thing. I mean, I'm still of the opinion that Cook's still got a couple of years in it.
Well, I was quite amazed at the timing. Obviously, he hasn't had the best of form in the last 12 months or so. I thought he might try and do the following, Tom. I thought he might try and say, look, I need to take a bit of a break from the game. Me going to Sri Lanka is probably not maybe a move that I could take a rest and maybe give a different guy a chance. But next summer is a massive summer for English cricket. Obviously, the World Cup's there, which he wouldn't have played a part in, the 50-over cricket. That's an Ashes series. And I thought we maybe had one more Ashes, and maybe at home in England, that was the final. And he could have said, I'm going to finish after the series. So it wasn't a lot of fanfare. England knew throughout the summer that he was going after that five test match series against the Aussies in the Ashes, and they can plan a succession plan from there. He hasn't given them much time to figure it out, figure out what the solution is, but he's made his mind up. He's a stubborn bloke, and I've got no doubt that once he's retired, he's retired. He's not coming back. It's like his batting. Once he was in. You weren't going to get him out. So I think it's done. Interesting to hear many of the comments and tributes coming into him from the week, and it'll be interesting to hear what Andrew Strauss, his former opening partner, said about him. Andrew Strauss has come out and said that he is the greatest English cricketer of all time. That's a heady statement. Of course, this was probably England's last best great opening partnership, Strauss and Cook. They did such a wonderful job for England for a number of years. But Andrew Strauss now, who plays a major role at the ECB in terms of picking Team England and being involved in the administrative side of things, basically made that bold statement during the week. Just have a quick listen to what Andrew Strauss said about Alistair Cook.
Well, I think firstly, just look at that first one, 160 test matches. I mean, I don't think people appreciate enough just what goes into performing just one test match for your country, all the kind of mental anguish, the preparation, the practice, the gym work. So to do that for as long as he's done, and then to do it as consistently as he's done, as an opening batsman, is an unbelievable achievement. I mean, I've been trying to say for years, opening the batting is by far the hardest thing that can happen in cricket. And to, so that average, that consistency, the number of times he's passed 50, and obviously the hundreds and the match-winning hundreds he's got, all combines to make him England's greatest player ever, in my opinion.
That's quite a big accolade.
Yeah, but, you know, I think greatness doesn't come on the back of one innings or a good summer. It comes on the back of repeated performance over an extended period of time. And he's done it. You know, he's got the stats to back it up. He's got the sort of universal respect of everyone he's played against all around the world. He's done it against every single team. And very few players are able to do that.
As a character, how stubborn is he? And how has that helped him with those numbers, do you think?
Well, he is stubborn, and he had his own way of playing the game, and sometimes it wasn't aesthetically massively pleasing, but that was the secret of his success, really, was being able to dig deep to show the kind of mental strength to, first of all, avoid too many bad days. You know, you have too many bad days in an England shirt and you're out of the team, and then secondly, to come back from those bad days, just block out all the noise, concentrate, play one ball at a time. That's a very, very unique skill he had, and it's linked to his stubbornness, but it's more than anything, it's just a clarity of thought and a willingness just to be himself and not try and be anyone else.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.